you hear what I hear? Because I hear some fish frying. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 469 of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Well, we're hearing all sorts of stuff in this week's Fish Fry. My guest is Chairman and CEO of Sensory, Todd Mosier. Todd and I are talking about Sensory's new cloud-based voice and vision AI service called Sensory Cloud AI. The details of their speech recognition solutions aimed at children's voices, and where Todd thinks voice control in automotive designs is headed in the future. But before we bring in Todd, how about a little news you may have missed? Now, when are we hearing and when are we listening? I deal with this issue all the time in my house. My 6-year-old seems to have an especially hard time listening for his name. Now, I'm pretty sure he hears me, but he is definitely not listening. Well, a group of researchers at the University of Basel may have come up with an answer. They have actually traced the neuronal fingerprint of these two types of sound processing. Okay, so we all know that passive hearing and active listening are two very different things, right? See previous experience with my 6-year-old. Well, there are a couple different reasons for this. Movement, attention, and an animated state all contribute to how sound is processed in our brains. Well, two researchers from the Department of Biomedicine at Basel University have found what happens when that sound processing happens. In their research, these two neural scientists took a closer look at the activity of the neurons in 4 specific areas of the brain that are known to deal with complex sound processing. During their research, the mice in their experiments were either passively listening to sounds or they were actively listening. Now, during the active listening part of this experiment, these mice were also given a reward for detecting those sounds. And what they found was pretty interesting. They found that a majority of the neurons in those areas did change between hearing and listening, but not all of the neurons behaved the same way. They actually found 10 different types of activity change in those neurons. Okay, so to add a bit of context here, it's important to understand that the auditory pathway in our brains consists of a bunch of different nuclei that relay acoustic information from the cochlea to the primary auditory cortex. In terms of this research, this team wanted to study specifically 2 of the 4 areas along that auditory pathway that they thought was at a higher level of processing complexity. Professor Tanya Rinaldi-Barcott explains this aspect of their research like this. At the beginning of our study, we suspected that these were the areas particularly affected by attention to sounds. Surprisingly, however, this wasn't the case. She goes on to say, the results make it clear that even the detection of a simple sound is a cognitive process that profoundly and extensively shapes the way the brain works, even at very early stages of sensory processing. Wow. So, if you want even more information about this study, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, including a link to the associated research paper called Task-Induced Modulations of Neuronal Activity Along the Auditory Pathway. All right, it's time to bring in Todd from Sensory. Let's go. Hi, Todd. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, it's nice to be here, Amelia.
Great. Okay, so first up, for my audience who may not know, what is Sensory all about?
Sure. Sensory is all about enabling people to interact with products the way that we interact with each other. So basically, we develop and enable AI technologies that are fast, accurate, secure, and when desirable, we can make them ultra low power. We're a technology licensing company, and we've licensed Amazon and Apple and Google and Microsoft and Samsung and hundreds of companies that have shipped many billions of products with sensory technologies embedded inside. And we've been working with neural nets and AI really long before it was trendy or called deep learning. So we've done a lot of pioneering work in voice technologies for consumer electronics.
So you guys recently launched Sensory Cloud AI, which is a cloud-based voice and vision AI service. So what all does this AI as a service include?
Sure. Let me jump back to our history a little bit before answering that, because our history is really in edge-based solutions. So we've been doing stuff on device, AI on device, for a long time. And the benefit of being on device is being always available and fast and totally private. But there's certain challenges that have always hindered us in being on device. And that has to do with data collection to improve the algorithms. So by moving to the cloud, we have the ability, and we can talk about that in more detail, but we have the ability to do a better job with real usage data. And also by moving to the cloud, we get the processing power and memory that we can't always get on device. So in answering your question, there's really two types of new capabilities, and let me touch on each. One is the ability to improve our embedded offerings that we've already had and are out on the market. And the other is the ability to introduce new offerings. So in terms of improving on our existing stuff, there's a lot of products on the market today that use our wake words and on-device can command and control. And with the Sensory Cloud, we can use a smaller, ultra-low power on-device wake word or command set and then revalidate in the cloud. Our on-device models are really quite good. They're the best in the industry, but that doesn't mean they're perfect. And we've done some experiments lately and have shown that with our cloud-based revalidation, we can lower something like false accept rates by 90%. So a really remarkable improvement over an already great solution. Also, if our customer allows us to collect the user data, and that data collection is completely within the control of our customers, we can automatically rebuild newer, improved models that can either run on device or run in the cloud. So the Sensory Cloud enables a host of hybrid solutions that can really utilize the best of both worlds. You asked about our new offerings as well. And let me give some examples of things that we're doing now in the cloud that we really couldn't do on device. Two of those are speech to text and text to speech. Text to speech is the kind of technology that it's got to be big to sound really good. And we've done embedded text to speech and we've shipped it in products, but we've done ultra tiny things on device. And with the cloud, we can do really big, really good sounding solutions. With speech to text, we have the accuracy and quality in the cloud to hit really state of the art kind of error rates. So we're getting below 5% word error rates on our speech to text solutions in the cloud. So we're seeing a lot of new abilities with the cloud, as well as ways to improve our on-device solutions.
Fantastic. Now, how would customers take advantage of this new hybrid cloud to edge platform?
Sure. We're already selling device on-device solutions with SDKs. With the cloud, we can now enable those same SDKs or new SDKs to reach our cloud with a containerized approach. We'll also have an API-based solution for the cloud that people can hit directly. With the cloud solution, we can use any standard Kubernetes-type clouds like AWS. So we have the ability to be very flexible in the deployment.
Fantastic. Now, what kind of products do you see this being applicable to?
There's a whole host of industries and markets that this could use. Our roots are really in the consumer electronics area, and we're already seeing a lot of our customers in the consumer electronics space express interest in what we're doing in the cloud. Just at the recent demos at CES, we saw interest from a whole realm of different consumer electronic players that really want to both improve their abilities without increasing the power consumption. But we've also seen interest from things like automotive, where they need on-device solutions, but are sometimes connected to the cloud. So this hybrid sort of approach makes a lot of sense for them. We also think with our new cloud offerings, we'll be able to break into new markets. So we've never really focused on medical or enterprise or hospitality, but with the new cloud offerings, it opens up a lot of new markets to us.
I could definitely see that. Now, Todd, this new service lets companies have full control over their AI deployments and the data generated from them, correct?
That's absolutely right. That's one of the more unique things that we're offering as opposed to somebody like, you know, the Amazons and the Googles that have awesome cloud solutions and awesome AI technologies, but you really have to work within their systems. And we give complete flexibility to our customers. So we can drop them a container that can be deployed on their premise. It can be deployed in their cloud, or we can host it ourselves. And whichever source the data goes into, they have complete control. They can give us access to it so we can bring it back to Sensory and work on models. We're even working on interesting approaches to completely privatize the data that goes to their cloud. And we're working on approaches that allows the data to never leave their location for data hosting.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. So earlier last year, you released a speech recognition specifically for children. So can you tell me more about that? I appreciate this technology on a personal level because my Alexa has a lot of trouble understanding my six-year-old.
You know, the first 5 or 10 years of Sensory's life, all we did was speech recognition for children. It's really where our roots were. And we were deployed by Mattel and Hasbro and Lego and MGA, all the big toy companies were using us. And it's really fun for us to be getting back into that space. And it is challenging. It's challenging for two reasons. One, as you mentioned, children's voices are different, so they're hard to recognize, but there's also stricter laws on privacy for children. And because we've become so privacy focused with our new children's language models and acoustic models, we have some really, really nice offerings, both on device where privacy is inherent because there's never data leaving it, as well as in the cloud. On device, we've built special models for children, and in the cloud, because we have more access to data, we've built giant models that work with both children and adults almost equally well. So our kids' accuracy rates are pretty close to that 5% word error rate that we're seeing on adults, which is really the best in the world for children.
Wow. Okay, so you guys published a blog talking about voice control in cars in December of 2021. So on the heels of CES, Todd, where do you think this voice control is headed in the future?
Yeah, it's getting better and better because it has to. If you look at the history of the automotive industry, voice in car and speech recognition has been really the most desired area, but it's also been the area that's gotten the worst ratings on experience. And so it is improving. And the challenge in cars is that it needs to really run on the device. You can't have a car that suddenly becomes disconnected, as we often do in the United States, and then your speech recognition capabilities go down. And that's exactly why Sensory's new hybrid technologies that take advantage of the cloud when it's available, but can build models and put them down on the device to improve. And so it's always there on device, but accesses the cloud when needed and capable. It's really interesting for automotive. And in automotive, it's not just speech recognition that's needed. There's a whole host of AI technologies for autonomous driving. Sensory provides sound identification technologies in cars, which is really interesting. We provide biometrics so the car can know who you are and adjust the settings for you. We can even do things like look at the face while a person's driving. So if they get drowsy or close their eyes, we can have warnings that go out. So there's a lot of really neat things that we can do in the automotive environment.
That's super cool. All right, Todd, I think it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I normally ask a food question, so I'm going to change it a little bit for you. You are vegan. So when did you become a vegan and what was your motivation to do so?
Sure. I'm a vegetarian and pretty close to being a vegan. I've been a vegetarian for 50 7 years, like, and I'm 62. So I've been one for a really, really long time. Back in the old days, it was really hard to be a vegetarian. You know, it seemed like whenever we went out to dinner, it was spaghetti for me. but today, almost every restaurant has vegetarian options. I think I originally did it just because the idea of eating animals was literally distasteful to me. We had a lot of pets, but today I keep it up. You know, it's good for the environment, and actually vegetarians seem to live longer. You know, it's not necessarily a causal relationship because it's correlated, but vegetarians do live longer.
That's true. Awesome, Todd. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure and my honor to be here, Amelia.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. Also, if you'd like any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or heck you just want to chat, shoot me a line at Amelia, that's AMELIA, at eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of February 18th, 2022, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.